It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting,
most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Over on one.
Yeah, well, you're
half
right.
This is
going to
be huge.
This is going to
be our finest
time. Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
One down, three to go with this work week. Yeah, shortened up because of the holiday. It is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rupp along with Adam Lundy. We've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll get to a couple of texts here in just a minute. Coming up this hour, we will talk to TinCast manager Jonathan Matthews as he gets set to send his tin caps out on the field for game one of a 6-game set against in-state rival South Bend Cubs. Of course, the game time tonight at 6:35. That means 6:15, the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show with Mike Maz and Derek Decker on the call. So we did get some text, by the way, when I was talking about cargo shorts and whether or not they're in style, not in style. It seems to me to be a generational difference. Because I think there are certain age groups where cargo shorts are completely out. There are certain age groups where cargo shorts are still acceptable because of the practicality of them. You need those pockets. And somebody pointed that out on our text line. A dad got to take, got to have their pockets full of stuff. And so they think cargo shorts are still a go.
Yeah, two very differing opinions here on the cargo pants here on the text line, 46862. One listener texting in, cargo shorts will never be out of style, and that's a 47-year-old dad here.
Yeah,
so,
got to live with those. And, you know, by the time you get to 47, that's where you start to get to that age where you're wearing the same shorts. Unless you're changing body size, you're wearing the same shorts year after year after year. And so think of all the changes they've made. And you know who does it to us, Adam? I will tell you, it's the fashion industry. They tell us, oh, all the shorts have to cover your kneecap. Remember that 2 years ago? Every pair of shorts you bought, if they didn't get down to your kneecap, they were too short. They were like wearing 1970s basketball shorts. That's the way you felt in them. Okay, so what we do, we went out, replaced our entire wardrobe with shorts that hung all the way down to our knees. And then what happened? Within a couple of years, oh, well, those look goofy. Now they're like mid-thigh, right? Or they're, maybe just below mid-thigh. But now all the shorts are a completely different length. And I tell you, they do that just to get 47-year-old people, and maybe even 59-year-old people, to go out and buy new shorts because we don't want to look stupid and not in with it. And boy, they've mastered this, right? They've completely made people think if you wear shorts that were from 2 years ago, man, are you behind the times?
Yeah.
And I think cargo shorts apply. Although we did get a fairly strong message that cargo shorts are no longer acceptable.
Yeah, this texter definitely going the other way on the cargo shorts topic. They said, you might as well wear white tube socks with your thong sandals if you're wearing cargo shorts.
So if I'm already wearing the white socks with the sandals, does that mean my cargo shorts can stay?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess you've already, devoted yourself to that area of fashion. Yeah.
I actually had a Mastodon's trip.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness nobody knows this except the fact that I'm sharing it right now.
Yeah, on live radio.
On live radio, just between friends. I took a Mastodon's trip and forgot my dark socks.
Uh-oh.
My dress socks.
Yeah.
And I had packed dress shoes, navy blue dress pants, a button-down shirt, and a jacket, like a sport coat. And I had white socks. I honestly had no choice but to wear the dress shirt with a sport coat, with navy blue pants, with black dress shoes, and white athletic socks. I know that, I mean,
fashion faux pas.
Oh, I had to figure out how can I get into my chair courtside. And then I was hoping that we would have a broadcast position.
Yeah.
Where you'd have everything covered up. So when you sat down,
tablecloth,
no one could see it. Right.
Did that work out?
Yes, it worked out.
All right.
In fact, I did admit that to, I believe, Coach Kaufman. I actually admitted it to, and he said, I'm sure one of us would have had an extra pair of socks. But, I'd forgotten to pack a pair of socks, hurrying to get down and catch the bus, and I thought, oh, no.
Another text that just rolled in, they said, cargo shorts are still in for retired guys because you have enough pockets for everything you own. So you never forget and leave anything at home.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it sounds like they're still in favor.
What's the age? Acceptable age?
Yeah.
Is it 40 plus, 45, 50? I mean, there's got to be a certain breakdown. If you're a dad, do all of a sudden then you qualify to wear cargo shorts?
I don't know.
Because it sounds to me like the younger kids.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we're fans.
They're not big on the cargo shorts. But for us that have figured out the practicality of them, where it's like, oh, man, I got a pocket for my phone. I got a pocket for my wallet. I got my keys. I don't have to put them all in the same pocket where they scratch each other up. We love them. And I think it's because we're more practical at our age, where fashion is what's driving the 20-something crowd. So I'm all in on cargo shorts.
All right.
46862. All right, so... time for you to call if you want to be part of our Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. Right now is the time to call. We've got a large pizza to Pizza Hut up for grabs. If you want to play and be today's contestant, call us up, 260-447-8500. That's 260-447-8500 for Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. Of course, my Florida Panthers had to wait after sweeping their series against Carolina to find out who they were going to play in the Stanley Cup. It's now official. The Florida Panthers will take on the Las Vegas or Vegas Golden Knights. The series will start in Las Vegas coming up this Saturday. It will continue in Las Vegas on Monday before shifting to Sunrise, Florida for Thursday, Saturday games. And then the following week on June 13th, a Tuesday, they'll play in Las Vegas, fly right back to South Florida for a Friday game if necessary. And the series will finish up on a Monday, June 19th, with Game 7 if necessary, if the Panthers haven't won it by then. So there you go. There's the Stanley Cup Finals schedule. All right, we've got somebody on the line ready to play some Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. Who's this?
Hello?
Who's this?
This is Kenny.
Kenny?
Yes.
All right, Kenny, I'm sorry about that. A little trouble connecting there at first, but I think we've got everything worked out. All right, Kenny, so do you know how Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia works?
I do.
Okay, then we don't have to spend time on the rules or the explanations. Let's get the game started.
It's time for Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia on the Sports Rush.
All right, let's get right into it here. Clue number one. The 8th Amateur Radio Direction Finding World Championship was held in this year in Germany.
Kenny, it is clue number one. That means you can play or pass. We alternate on every clue from here on out. So what would you like to do?
Oh, I will hand this one off to you.
Okay, we will give it a shot. I'll say 1987.
88.
All right, on to clue two.
All right, clue number two here, guys. The Rochester Nighthawks defeat the Buffalo Bandits 15-12 to win the Major Indoor Lacrosse League Championship in this year.
Kenny, you get to go first on this one.
1984.
1989.
All right, clue number three. The Florida Gators won 52-20 over the Florida State Seminoles to win this year's national championship football game.
I believe, let me think and do some quick math. I will say
1981. 83.
Oh, we got the 80s pretty covered here. I think we might have to get out of the 80s.
Clue number four. This will be Kenny guessing first. Tiger Woods creates an uproar with his record 12-shot victory at the Masters and becomes the first Masters winner of African-American descent in this year.
96.
It was 1997.
I knew you were going to get the golf one, Brett, so that's why I was glad Kenny was going first.
You thought he'd take that. As soon as you said Tiger Woods, my eyes lit up.
I got a little nervous there, yeah.
Yeah, Kenny, I'm sorry about that. Couldn't quite pull it out. You were really close, though, after we had fished around in the 80s. You came up with 96, just a year off. Hey, hold on the line, Kenny. We're going to get you a large pizza to Pizza Hut just for playing.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yep. And so, Kenny, hold on and don't hang up. Just stay on the line. Adam will get some info from you coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Of course, we've also got Jonathan Matthews that we'll be talking to about Tin Caps baseball coming up on the other side of the break.
This is Mike Nutter, team president of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, and you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Appropriate, the Tin Caps president Mike Nutter bringing us back for this segment. Of course, we get a chance almost every week to talk to TinCast manager Jonathan Matthews. And it is that time of the week for us to talk to Jonathan Matthews right now. So let's bring in TinCast manager Jonathan Matthews to the show. And, hey, you know, before we get into questions about the roster, I got this idea. Tin Caps obviously only have one left-hander on the roster, and he's not in the bullpen. I would really enjoy it, just so that I know you remember me, or at least have thought about me momentarily. When you walk out to change pitchers tonight, when you call to the bullpen, could you hold up your left hand and point to it like you're calling for the lefty?
If I do that, I'm afraid my bullpen coach might come in. Brian Burris, left-handed pitcher, pitched in the big league for 6 years. I'm afraid. I'd be glad to bring him in.
I was going to say, he's like, hey, I get my chance. I can't believe it. but, you know, it is something about the roster construction that there's not left-handers. How unusual is that? Is it something that's looked at by the organization, the fact you don't have many left-handed pitchers on this roster?
Apparently not. I don't know. You know, we had Jason Blanchard, who was really good for us down there, which fortunately for us and also unfortunately, because then we sent him to Double A, but he was kind of only our left-handed bullpen arm. So we only had the two. We had Bodie Rascone, you know, as a starter, and Blanchard out of the pen. And now that Blanche left, we're left-handerless. The most left-handers we have are on our staff. I'm left-handed. Burris is left-handed. Jerry Downs is left-handed. So, all of the left-handers are on the coaching staff.
Well, and let's talk about Bodie Rascone, because he was pretty special in his start on Saturday, following up what was a terrific start by Ryan Burgert. We've talked about Ryan, I think, a couple of times with you, but let's talk about Bodie, because he's been a different pitcher at home than he has been on the road, but he might have been at his best on Saturday. What did you see out of him? What are the keys to him being successful?
You know, his delivery is funky. It's going to be an odd pitch. He has, like, major league type stuff. And when he throws it over the plate, he's going to be tough to beat. And that's what he did on Saturday. You know, his last outing in Dayton wasn't very good, but he, after the second inning, kind of came in and we've had that little bug thing that's kind of gone around. And he came in and wasn't feeling very well. So I don't think he felt good to start the game. And he went out and tried to gut it out, but he wasn't at his best. But he was back at 100% on Saturday, and he was throwing the ball over the plate, and it was neat to see.
A couple of guys we saw out of the pen over the weekend, had some struggles recently, and I'm just wanting to get your thoughts on what you saw from them and what are their keys to success. Keegan Collette and Nick Thwaites, we saw them in separate games over the weekend. And I see these two guys, and I think their stuff seems pretty similar. Fastball, good curveball, over the top, 12-6 break. And yet, you know, they've both had times when they've struggled, but they were both really good this weekend. What are their keys?
Keegan's key is to throw the baseball over the plate. You know, his stuff is as good as anybody's. That curveball that you mentioned, that breaking ball, is about as good as anybody's. And when he throws it over the plate, he's going to be hard to hit, which he did. And then Nick, I think, kind of forgot about his heater and some of his previous outings. And he remembered, you know, he has a pretty good fastball to go along with his breaking stuff. So he was throwing some more heaters and throwing them for strikes, getting ahead. And then he could get to his secondary stuff as opposed to, you know, his last couple outings, it seemed like he was relying on the secondary stuff first. And he forgot how good his fastball was.
We saw a tweak to the batting order with Jacob Marcy, who's been the starting pitcher through most, or leadoff batter through most of this season, being moved down into the sixth spot. What was behind that?
Just, you know, shuffling the deck a little bit. You know, I think one of the things that Marcy does very well is he gets on base. And I think in that leadoff spot, he felt the pressure to get on base, and so he was a little bit passive. Trying to draw his walk and do those things to get on base, but we also want him to be able to impact the baseball. So I kind of moved him down in the lineup a little bit remind him that, hey, man, it's okay for you to drive the ball once in a while, and it's okay for you to drive in runs. And so just kind of shuffled the deck and took a little bit of that pressure off of him.
One of the guys that actually maybe has flipped from being what we thought would be ultimate power to being a guy that's getting some very key base knocks, Joshua Mears. And it's good to see reducing that strikeout total and also coming through with some clutch hits for you with guys on base. And that's something the roster, I think, kind of missed there for a while in April. But you're getting it more consistently now. And Joshua Mears, who's got, what is it, 7 or 8 straight games with an RBI, he's been delivering in the clutch for you recently. What are you seeing out of Joshua?
You know what? I mentioned this the other day to somebody. He's done a really good job of incorporating, I guess, what I would call his B swing or his C swing. You know, when he gets the two strikes, he cuts it down a little bit. He's making more contact. There's been less swing and miss. We all have seen his A swing, and he hits balls 500 feet. And he's still doing that. He's still taking his shot when he gets into, you know, 2-0, 3-1 counts. But also then when more even counts or if he's behind, he kind of goes, he's been going to that B swing a little bit more lately. And his B swing is plenty, you know. And he's been basically making more contact. And whenever he makes contact, he's dangerous. You know, he's a little bit different. He doesn't have to absolutely square up balls, and they're still leaving his bat at 100 miles an hour. So, he's done a really good job of that here in the last week or so.
Of course, we've seen the significance of how starting pitching has benefited the Tin Caps. Saw that on display over the weekend. One guy that had a little bit of a tough start in this past series was Jairo Iriarte. After we sang his praises and the no-hitter that he had a hand in the week before, struggled a bit. What is the difference? It seemed like it was a very fine difference, a very subtle difference between the success and the failure, and often that's the case in professional baseball. But what are you looking for out of him tonight?
Rebound, you know, a rebound start. That start last week, he got touched up a little bit. There were some kind of funky balls early in the game, some ground balls and little soft contact base hits. And then he had some traffic, and he gave up his share of hard contact too, but I look for him to rebound tonight. And I would say, you know, his last outing that he struggled last Tuesday night was probably a one-off. And I fully anticipate him getting back to form tonight.
Where are the pitchers at? Does every pitcher have a different pitch count? Because we saw Ryan Burger go 7 strong the other night and throw 90 pitches. We talk about stretching out these starters. Is there a point they're at collectively, or is it still an individual basis?
Very individualized. Lizarraga on Sunday was His pitch count was down a little bit because he had kind of had been sick a little, and we were kind of ramping him back up. Sometimes if they have a longer outing, so like Bergie said, went 90 pitches, and so we might back him off a little bit this time. But it's still very individualized based on their workload and a lot of times their age, and, you know, what they had done maybe the previous time out also.
What about the energy in the ballpark? Guys have to enjoy the fact that the ballpark's coming to life with the warmer weather. It's got to be fun for these guys to play in front of some really big crowds.
Oh, man, starting on, you know, and really all week, but starting with Thirsty Thursday, it was pretty electric here. And I've been here, and I've seen it and been through it, and so I keep telling these guys, and it's nice for them to get to see it here firsthand, and I would assume this week will probably be very, very similar. The weather's nice, and the crowds have been incredible. It's really been an electric place here this last homestand.
Best of luck against the South Bend Cubs. We'll look forward to talking to you again. Enjoy this week
at
home.
I will do that. Thank you.
Yep, that's Jonathan Matthews, TinCast manager, joining us on our guest line. We will go ahead and take a timeout. We'll come back. We got plenty more. And, of course, TinCast Baseball tonight starts at 6:35, 6:15 with Mike Maz and Derek Decker on the call from Parkview Field. We'll be back. It's a Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Purdue Fort Wayne men's basketball coach John Coffin, and you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Go Dogs.
We are back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. You had a chance to talk to Coach Kaufman on Talking Sports when you were filling in, hosting for Jim Shevlin. And anything exciting come from Coach Kaufman? Did he announce that the Mastodons will play FAU this year?
Didn't get the Owls matchup out of Kaufman, but I did get a very good kind of rundown of all the new players that are going to be joining the Mastodons roster for the upcoming season. Really excited for some of the guys that are going to be joining the program, and kind of got a little bit of a taste of what they've been doing in the off season so far with the Dons. But things are really going to start ramping up here in the next couple weeks with the guys getting back to the gym here in Fort Wayne.
Well, they've got their kids camp coming up too. So for parents that have kids that want to learn some of the fundamentals of basketball, you get a chance to learn from the coaching staff and from the players themselves. And believe me, that's something that...
It's a great opportunity.
That's big for kids, right. So if you've got kids, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth grade, you're trying to figure out, what do you do with a kid who's 8, 9, 10 years old during the summer?
Yeah.
You know, keep them from just sitting around doing nothing. Take them out and spend a week with the John Kaufman Basketball Camp. And, of course, you can go to johnkaufmanbasketballcamps.com to get your info and get signed up. Comes up in a couple of weeks.
What was your go-to summer day, nothing-to-do activity when you were younger?
See, here's the thing. I grew up in North Crest.
Mm-hmm.
And those that know where the Kohl's and the Best Buy... Okay, I lived in the neighborhood right behind that, and back in my day, back in my day, we used to do all these daring things that kids wouldn't get away with today. We used to ride our bikes over to Putt-Putt.
Oh, yeah, love it.
Oh, yeah, that was fantastic, and so we would go play, and it was like $5 play all day type of thing.
Sweet.
Yeah, and so we'd ride over there 8 in the morning and play till like 5 in the afternoon or awesome. Until we had to be at Little League practice or whatever. So that was a big go-to. The other was movies.
Yeah.
My parents loved it when I would decide that on game day, Little League game day, didn't want to exert all that extra energy. So game day, we'd go to a movie, sit in the air conditioning, just relax and chill. Watch some movie. We'd see it 8 or 9 times during the course of the summer. But back then, the matinees were really cheap on weekdays. So a couple bucks, you get to watch a movie. And then finally, the third thing was we played Nerf baseball. And I believe I invented Nerf baseball. But, you know, the Nerf ball, it's about the size of a softball?
Yes.
Okay. In my backyard, I actually mowed it real short. Fertilize the heck out of it. It's my first practice at getting like a really...
Wow, groundskeeping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I decided I wanted to have a field in our backyard. Our backyard was like 20 feet long, wide by 50 feet long, small backyard. But I was able to get a Nerf. And so Nerf baseball was a one-on-one game. And let me tell you, if you know how to throw a curveball, you can get a Nerf ball to break about 4 feet. You can throw it from behind a guy all the way off the outside corner. And we used to play one-on-one games of baseball during the day. How about you?
For me, it was usually, like in the summer, it would definitely be getting a ride in somebody's parents' car to go to Northside Park, to go to the pool.
Oh, yeah.
The pool there. We were always there at Northside Park at the pool.
As long as you weren't sitting in front of a computer screen 8 hours a day while the parents were at work.
No. I definitely grew up in right before I feel like kids really started to spend all summer inside.
All right, so the race was this weekend. Of course, Joseph Newgarden pulls out the dramatic win at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And that means somebody has won our squares game. We gave away the squares last week. And our winner is Corey. Congratulations, Corey.
Yeah, they've...
Joseph Newgarden wins like $10 million, and Corey gets a large pizza to Pizza Hut. Seems like something's not quite fair. But, Corey, you are the one that picked box number 4, and that was Joseph Newgarden. So, Corey, you're the winner.
Yeah, shot them a text, so...
Okay, and close but no cigar. I mean, those that had to be on the edge of their seats. Marcus Erickson. Was holding on, hoping to see Marcus Erickson pull out the win. Alex Palou, who had the pole and had such a good day, and it looked like maybe he would be there. John G.
Oh, no pizza, John.
Oh, John. Bet you were starting to taste it. And Santino Ferrucci. He was one of those guys you thought he's going to be there at the end with a chance.
Yeah.
And Jeff had Santino Ferrucci, but unfortunately... All for naught. My pick to win was Scott Dixon, and he didn't have a great day.
How did he do?
Where did he end up? He might have been in the top 10, but he was running 5 or 6 or 7 through most of the day. Ended up finishing 6th, but he was never in contention where you thought he's going to have a shot to win. It's always that front group of 3 or 4 that are really the ones in the running.
Yeah.
And when you get down to 6, 7, or 8, you just don't feel they're in a position. And for some reason, he just couldn't get over that hump. He was constantly running in that 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 position. Our buddy Rinus VK, who was on the show, he ended up finishing 10th.
Top 10.
Takuma Sato, another one of the guys that I thought had a chance.
Yeah.
7th.
Hey, yeah, they're all top 10 guys.
I didn't hit on any of my bets.
Oh.
I went with Palou, Dixon, Sato, and who was the 4th driver I ended up? I ended up with a 4th driver, and I don't even know where they're. Oh, Will Power.
Oh, you just bet on that name, didn't you?
Yeah, because I liked Will Power. And unfortunately, he didn't have enough of it. He finished 23rd.
That was bad.
Right in front of Simon Pagenaud.
All right.
All right, so there you go. And, of course, the big accident late in the race that caused the decision for IndyCar whether or not to go yellow to the finish or try to put on the red and get a green flag lap to decide the race. They decided they would try to get one lap of green. And, of course, a lot of people debating it. I don't know. I thought they could have stopped the race a lap or two sooner if they'd have made an immediate decision to go red right away on the crash. But I think they had to try to determine how long it was going to take for cleanup and could they get everybody out of the way faster than trying to bring everybody in and put them back on the course. So, you know, I get it, but it's one of those learning experiences for IndyCar officials because ideally that's not the way to end the race, but also with 300 and some thousand people and their energy, you want to see the cars going in a race for the final lap, not in a parade.
No.
I mean, you didn't buy a ticket to see a final lap parade at 75 miles per hour. And so they tried to take care of that, tried to get a finish that would bring some drama. But it makes it awful tough when you get the green flag, white flag, same lap, and you've got one lap to race and try to win it. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. The NBA finals are set.
Yeah, speaking of trying to win it.
It's the Heat. Boy, are they loving sports in South Florida this year.
Got to be having a blast down there.
I mean, where are the Marlins? They got any chance of sneaking into a wild card spot somehow, some way?
Let's check the standings.
I mean, come on, because the way the year's gone, I would watch out for the fish if you end up in the playoffs, because you've got Florida Atlantic, who, of course, had the run to the Final Four. The Miami Hurricanes also took the run to the Final Four. The Florida Panthers barely make the playoffs, but then knock off the mighty Boston Bruins. They go on to beat Toronto. They beat Carolina. They're into the Stanley Cup Final. And then the Miami Heat. They go from a play-in game where they actually lost their initial play-in, end up with the 8 seed.
Yeah.
And here they are playing the Denver Nuggets, trying to win a championship.
And a little look into the Miami Marlins right now. They are second in the National League East behind the Atlanta Braves. They're 4 games back of the Braves at 28 and 26.
They got a chance to be a wild card, man.
Sure do.
They got a chance. That's it.
If they're in,
don't bet against them. Don't bet against them. In fact, right now, I'm going to go in and I'm going to drop a 5 spot on the Marlins to win the World Series.
Probably get some good odds
on
that.
Maybe I should just drop a 5 spot for them to make the World Series.
Could still probably get good odds on that,
because
too.
Because not like Florida Atlantic or Miami won, but they made the Final Four.
Yeah.
And Miami and the Panthers haven't won, but they've made the championship. Yeah, so it might be a good bet just to say, what the heck, let's try 5 and see what the odds are.
What the hey?
Mr. Vegas probably knows the odds. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Has Denver gotten the easiest path to the final? I saw this posted by somebody. Have they had the easiest path to the final in NBA history? In fact, easiest path to a championship should they win it. They have played 2 8 seeds, a 4 seed, and a 7 seed. Those would be the 4 series against 2 8s, a 7, and a 4. That's certainly not a difficult route. I'm not trying to take anything away from Denver.
Right.
Terrific basketball team. But that does seem like that's going to be an asterisk, or that's going to be something brought up.
Well,
is that they caught some breaks and got perhaps an easier path to a championship.
I think that we've seen from these playoffs that seeding isn't quite as important as we might have thought it is in past years, because you see these lower seeds definitely competing a lot heavier with these higher seeds.
Memphis was a 2 seed, disappeared very quickly in these playoffs.
Yeah, so honestly, it could be a case of just some of the better teams didn't have the best regular season and kind of fell down in the playoff standings. But another thing is, it's Nuggets handled their business in the regular season, and that's what you get for being the first seed. You get lower teams.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you go chalk, you would play either the 2 or the 3 at some point. You should play the 4, again, if you're going chalk, mm-hmm. which means it should be either the 2 or the 3 and the 4, and then maybe the 8 in the first round. But then the final, you would expect to be a top 2 or 3 seed, right? Because coming from the other side, you expect that it's going to be one of the top seeds. And in this case, they're getting the 8th seed out of the East in the Miami Heat.
Yeah, it's definitely no cakewalk, but it's also not the hardest journey I've ever seen either. Let's just put it that way. But I mean, the West, yeah, the 3 seed was the Kings this year, the young and inexperienced team that happened to have a good regular season. The Grizzlies, kind of similar. They lost some of their players to injury before the playoffs. But, kind of interesting the way that these lower seeds have been showing out.
Yep, and so now Denver, Miami, do we give the Heat a chance against the Denver Nuggets? It's so interesting how people's perspectives change so quickly on the Miami Heat. They jump out to a 3-0 lead, and they're invincible. They've, you know, completely ripped the hearts out of Boston, that the Celtics quit in game 3.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the Celtics turn around, win 3 straight games, and then everybody is back on the bandwagon for the Celtics. Nobody thought the Heat were going to prevail in game 7 in Boston against the Celtics. And now, what are we talking about today? Blow up the Celtics. It's done. It's toast. It's, you know... Right? Yeah. I mean, everybody's saying you can't have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum on the court together. That's been proven. Well, they also didn't have Malcolm Brogdon. They had Williams, is it? The big guy was sick or something under the weather.
Apparently, he was throwing up a little bit during last night's game, only saw 14 minutes on the court.
You ever throw up a little bit? I mean,
a little bit.
You throw up to me. That's all. I mean, there's no little bit about it. It's like, it hurts, but the point is he was nauseous, didn't feel himself. Malcolm Brogdon, just 7 minutes, sixth man of the year, and he was really no factor in this series.
Dealing with some sort of elbow injury.
Yeah, elbow of some sort. Might require surgery. We'll see how the offseason goes, but probably not a surprise. Malcolm Brogdon on the shelf. It seemed like that's where he spent most of his time when he was a Pacer. And then Tatum and Brown, both bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, obviously, Tatum had that injury at the start of the game, so I know a lot of Celtics fans are going to be using that as a bit of an excuse as for why they lost, and then they'll probably bring up the Williams sickness and the Brogdon injury, but it's like the Heat were not coming in there unhobbled either.
Did we look at minutes that those two played? Because sometimes you wonder if when you're down 3-0 and you've got all the pressure of each of those games, do those guys end up going 42, 43 minutes night after night after night? Does that add up? And eventually you're risking a night like this where they just don't have the legs. They don't have their shot because they were bad. I mean, let's just be exactly honest here. Tatum, 14 points. Brown, 19 points. Turned it over 8 times. That, to me, could be mental fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
The Celtics shot just 39% for the field, 21% from 3. I thought Eric Spoelstra's willingness to play deep into his bench, and how about the job that Caleb Martin did?
Yeah, he's huge.
He should have been the MVP. How could he not be the most valuable player? Because from Butler, you got what you expect from Butler.
Yeah.
The difference in this series is you got from Caleb Martin way more than you expect from Caleb Martin. 26 points in the deciding game. He was 11 of 16 for the field, 4 of 6 from 3. For the series, he hit 60% of his shots. He was 53 of 88. He was huge.
Yeah.
Plenty more time to talk about it as the week progresses. We got to take a break. We'll come back. It's a Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Oh, it's a good Tuesday. Feeling good going home, knowing I got a victory in Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. That always puts a little bounce in my step. Tincast Baseball tonight, right here on the airwaves. Mike Maz and Derek Decker will team up to bring you Tin Caps Baseball against the South Bend Cubs live from Parkview Field in downtown Fort Wayne. It all starts with the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show at 6:15 and the first pitch with Jairo Iriarte at 6:35. Thanks to the guests that appeared on the show, Trine softball coach Don Dankelson, who's heading down to Texas to play in the NCAA Division III National Championships. Also, thanks to TinCast manager Jonathan Matthews, ahead of the start of that 6-game series against the Cubs. We'll be back tomorrow for a hump day edition of the Sports Rush. So be sure to tune in tomorrow, 4 to 6 on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.